Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome to La Liga Weekly, where we seem to be careering towards Barcelona clinching the title in the Clásico. Well played, Florentino. You've judged this last couple of seasons perfectly. They could avoid that embarrassing fate by deliberately losing this coming weekend's game against, well, let's see who they play. Oh, it's Espanyol, and you can't lose against them even if you try. I know, here's a better plan. Real Madrid should wind the clock back, appoint a talented up-and-coming manager, and don't sack him because a couple of prima donnas are sulking and you lost the Supercopa game. To be fair, Barcelona have won 9 league matches in a row in the business end of the season and will inevitably surpass their winning tally under Xavi and Flick one. So even if Real Madrid were allowed to organise like a grown-up football team, they might still not win anything. Atletico are close to touching glory. The trouble is, it could be Arsenal's glory. Imagine if Simeone's men lose to a club that ditched all that fancy rubbish and got some big solid lads who are good at set pieces. Could have saved yourself about $1 billion in transfer fees, Diego. But no matter what your troubles are, at least you're not a Sevilla fan. Unless you are a Sevilla fan, in which case it serves you right, because Mark Viduka was definitely fouled in the 2006 UEFA Cup final. Still bearing the grudge. Anyway, we're recording this on Tuesday because we waited 24 hours for the outcome of Espanyol 0, Levante 0. That's the sort of judgment that has made us famous. And today, as a bonus, we'll remember that there is a second division of Spanish football, but only today and only because violence sells. I'd like to welcome our new Patreons, patreon.com/LTEL. Our most recent joiners are Luke and Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is good, isn't it? It's good to see that he's getting involved. When you're in your sort of Jedi ghost form, can you still watch football? or you just got to pop along and give sort of sagely advice? Or can you think, right, now, cheers, lads, I'm off to, you know, it's the Clásico this weekend. I'm going to sit and watch the football. Right, Terry, there's a few bits to unpick. Should we get this one off your chest? Players faking.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Right in.
Yes.
Go on.
I've been fortunate this week to have worked on games, days, midweek round, straight into the weekend round. And it's become increasingly irritating and tiresome to see how many players go down injured. We're doing a replay. I have to co-commentate and go, well, there doesn't look much impact there. I have to guard against the fact the player's twisted something. So I always say, doesn't seem to be much of an impact injury. Perhaps he's twisted something, his ankle, his knee, because you have to guard against someone who's not had a kick and suddenly goes down and they've done their ACL or twisted an ankle or something. You're looking closely. Whilst I'm saying it, I'm thinking, they haven't. But you never know. But the amount of times, and we've got to this stage now where every single game, and I'm seeing it in other leagues as well, I'm seeing it in the Premier League now, more recently than ever, of this sudden 7 minutes added on time or 8 minutes added on time in every single game. Now, the one that really was the final straw for me was the Rayo Vallecano against Real Sociedad match that went 20, it was actually 25 minutes later. Nearly, it finished 25 minutes later than it should have done, because we had the added on time in the first half, massive amount of added on time in the second half. And if I'm being honest, it could have been more, because the amount of times players went down injured, you see the replay, physios come on, 2 or 3 minutes of treatment, player makes a miraculous recovery, game continues. That must have happened about 8 times in that game. And so you could have easily added another 10 minutes on to that debacle of the penalty, the disallowed goal and everything that went with that. And that took too long. And I just look at it now and I just think that there should be some sort of play. You can see, we see players go down and think he's holding his face. And when you see a replay, his face hasn't been touched, but the physio, poor guy has to go on, a woman has to go on and treat a player that's not injured. Mm. And you see players self-diagnosing injuries now. Sometimes I see a player go down injured, and I think, oh, that looks a bad one. And he's a bit magic sponge, and he's back playing again. And I don't get it. I don't get why. Are they trying to feign injury to get an opponent booked? Are they feigning injury to break the game up, to keep stopping the game? I'm sure some players do both, to be honest. It can be a tactic that, oh, I've been clipped, I'll go down. Are they getting, you know, we know it happens a lot in the penalty box because players stay down and stay on the floor now in an attempt to get the referee to look at VAR and VAR to get involved. But I just think it's become irritating now. No one wants to go watch a game of football and it lasts for 2 hours.
Yeah.
That's the big issue. It's Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, wherever it is, 6 o'clock, not a problem. But if you're going to a game on a Thursday night and it's 9:30 kickoff and it's due to end at 11:30 anyway, and it's going on till midnight because of added on time, that's not what everyone signed up for.
Yeah.
So the referees, people have a duty to actually get the game played at a tempo which doesn't keep stopping for the 90 minutes. Yes, there will be added. There's always been added on time. I get that. But now we're venturing into an extra half of extra time on every game that's being played. Then we're seeing the injuries and the stuff, the genuine injuries, the ACLs and the hamstrings and the, you know, muscle injuries that are keeping players out for a long time. We've got World Cup coming up. I couldn't believe how many games are in that. The Champions League has been elongated. More international games than ever. And I'm just thinking that there's too much football being played by the players, but which are leading to injuries. And perhaps some of that is because we're having 20 minutes on each game of football that's being played as well.
Yeah, right. So there's a lot there, Terry. let me come back on a few bits. So, yes, I take your point. Because what we've done now is move to adding on the extra time. So previously, you could lie down a bit. Rafa Varane made this point, didn't he? He was saying, listen, when they first were adding like 10 minutes on, we're going to do the added time properly. And he was saying, well, you're going to have to reduce the number of games. Because basically, he was saying, you put all these demands that you've said for a top player, this is. And so you're adding all this extra time on into games, but you're making us play the extra games and you're making us play in the summer. So their way of pushing back on that was essentially sitting down at some point in the game, I guess for a breather. Because you mentioned, one, it could be tactical, as in cheating. Two, it could be that, or, you know, trying to get someone sent off. It could be that they need a rest, or it could just be cultural in that they've got used to doing it and you feel a bit of a kick and you think, yeah, go on, down I go. You stop even thinking about it anymore. Whereas when you were playing, you did have this thing. There was a bit of a code, wasn't there, of you don't stay down unless you're injured kind of thing. Oh, I'm going to carry on. And if you got a reputation for a guy who went down every time someone kicked you, people would think less of you.
Physios used to give you a pollocking. They came on and you were like, and you got me up. I've got to run on the pitch. Get up.
So I've got questions. Right. So Gary Neville, in his commentary, goes on about, he's against, because you know the 30-second rule that was brought in. I think that's a good rule. Do you think that's not enough? Because it's changing this year. At the World Cup, it's going to be a minute. So if you get treatment, you've got to go off for a minute.
That's fine. Yeah,
so I guess that what FIFA have done is look at this and think, depends which league you watch. And I know it happens across the leagues, but I do think the Spanish league is bad for it, for what you've just described. And so they probably watched that and thought, 30 seconds isn't enough. If you're going to go down for a minute or 2 minutes for nothing, but I don't know how you legislate it, because you can't be saying, oh, well, there's not much wrong with him, so he's got to go off for three.
I just think if the physio comes on and you receive treatment, you go to automatically have to go on, I would say, longer than a minute.
Right, yeah.
I would say you're out of the game for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and then that will stop. I agree with you about it's cultural. It's almost like a habitual now.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been touched to go down. And sometimes I see a player, I think he's genuinely injured. And you see the replay and you see, and then, you know, 2 minutes later, there's nothing wrong with him.
Yeah.
So why is that?
Right. The difficulty with, here's the problem with that law, because sometimes people are genuinely injured, aren't they?
Yeah.
And the trouble is, you've been genuinely kicked, it's genuinely painful. And then if you've got to go off, right, your team's got a free kick. They put the other team defend the free kick and break on you, and they're breaking on 10 men because they've kicked you, and you're
serving
your 3 minute man.
If you're genuinely injured, you'd quite appreciate that 2 minutes to recover. If you're genuinely injured,
but your teammates wouldn't, would they? Because your team, you're off the pitch.
Yeah, but the injuries do happen. You do. I mean, sometimes it does hurt. Football can hurt. It can be a tackle. It doesn't have to be a foul, but you do get a bump and a knock and a bruise and a scratch or a stud mark. That happens. But then if you're genuinely injured, you'd need 2-3 minutes to recover. And if you're not, then it becomes a hindrance.
So what they're doing, because again, you see them roll back on the pitch is the classic example of this. You're injured on the touchline, they roll back on and then they get their treatment. And we can all see it, but we all know exactly what it is, because if you've got this kick, right, and it's going to be painful for 2 or 3 minutes, and then you're going to hobble for a minute before you, okay, that's a perfectly normal scenario in football. Right, you can sit down and have all this happen on the pitch while everybody else waits, or you can go off and recover while your teammates are playing 10 against 11.
Yeah.
So you can see why they don't do it, because they don't want to play 10 against 11 because I've been kicked in the shin and my tiny little shin pads haven't protected
exactly.
me.
Yeah.
So I get it's a difficult one to solve. I mean, I think going off for a minute, but I've got a problem with any more, really, because some people are genuinely injured and some people are cheating. I think it's another one where it's on the players, really, and the managers, because the coaching staff tell them to do it.
So, I think the biggest thing is a bit habitual now. I really do.
Yeah,
I think
a
tap, they go down. I think when they go down in the penalty box and stay down, that's an attempt to get the referee.
That's a VAR thing. Yeah.
We've taken the mickey out of Borja Iglesias this season. Yeah. He's done it 4 or 5 times and got, I'm not playing until you look at the VAR. I'm not getting up.
Yeah.
And they're not even pretending to be injured. They just sit on the floor and just lay on the floor as if say, you're going to have to stop the game at some stage. And this is the reason why. But it was infuriating watching the Real Sociedad Rayo game. Takekubo was the biggest culprit. He did it 3 times. Mm. And there was nothing wrong with him on any occasion. And treatment, he got up, Barrenechea did it, Rayo Vallecano players did it. It was one after the other. And this was on the top of the other games that I'd done over the previous 4 or 5 days. And I thought, I'm seeing this too much now. And then we get the 8 minutes added on at half time and 8 minutes at the end, or 12 minutes as it was, because it was, the circumstances were different in the Rio game. But it was just that one of those games where I thought, this has got to stop. You know,
you should start.
Players, they're feigning injury. They and they're yelping pain. And as I say, it's not just in La Liga. I've seen it in the Premier League as well, which is the other league I watch. And it's nonsense. It's got to stop.
I mean, we heard it in the lockdown, didn't we, where the games were in behind closed doors. You suddenly heard these sort of blood-curdling screams that the players give out. And you think, oh heaven, he's going to lose a leg or something. And then he's fine. Oh, fine. Thumbs up. All right.
Okay. And we see the ones that get, that claim they've been hit in the face and they're looking for blood.
Yeah.
There's nothing there because you didn't get hit in the face.
Yeah. Couple of things. We'll get later to the Celta Vigo game. Borja Iglesias scored a penalty this week. They did not cheat for this one. This was the other side of that coin, which is brainless players giving away stupid penalties in this particular case. And the other one, Terry, while we're talking about players faking injury, do you think Jorge Pulido was faking injury in the Zaragoza versus Huesca? Or not? Maybe he wasn't. If you haven't seen this, everybody, the Zaragoza Huesca derby has been a social media sensation because of Esteban Andrada, who I believe has been they've sacked him off, haven't they? I believe he was on loan. But he's only on loan, so he's going to get a 12-15 game ban or something, isn't he?
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that bad. It was reckless a bit. in the heat of the moment. I didn't think the punch connected that well, actually. I thought it was at the end of the reach.
He's it was a bit of a flappy open, got him with his sort of paw, didn't he, a bit?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're criticising the technique of Esteban Andrade. So, basically, he runs over and shoves him, doesn't he? And he gets a second yellow.
Already, hadn't he?
Yeah.
I think he'd received the card, and then he chased someone.
Yeah. So then he gets the second yellow. And the realisation is what sort of makes it funny. He looks, oh, I've got a second. I'm off, am I?
Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm off, I might as well actually land one. And he goes chasing after him and punches him. And like you say.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. And when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I mean, I think he catches him enough for it to be genuine contact, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. So there we are. Real Zaragoza, and they're both in the relegation zone, aren't they? So, Zaragoza. I mean, I don't watch games in it, if I'm honest, but they're in trouble, aren't they? Big old club.
Yeah. No. I know.
Yeah. Just say it's a thriving division, though, isn't it?
Oh,
La Liga 2 and the Segunda.
Yeah.
But yeah, not for them. Right. So
might be coming back up. Racing Santander might be coming up. Malaga are in the mix. There's a lot to play for in that division.
Yes.
And they'll be pleased that their season goes on until 2 days before the Liga starts next season.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they've got five more games to play, and then they've got a set of playoffs to come after that, isn't it?
I think their season actually ends the playoffs during the World Cup.
Yeah, which is it's nuts for that team that wins the playoffs. It's that they've got so little time because you can't plan
a month.
Yeah,
literally a month it'll be.
To
sort themselves out, get cobbled together a squad, which is probably one of the reasons why Oviedo and Levante have struggled this season. Elche came up, but it's tough enough getting promoted, and doing it in the playoffs doesn't give you any time whatsoever. But it's the same this season.
Right, let's get down to the rest of the business. So we'll go to the top of the top-ish of the league. Should we do Real Madrid first?
Yeah, they were Friday night, weren't they? Started the weekend round off.
Yeah. They get a 1-1 draw. They were leading until the 94th minute when that renowned goal scorer, Héctor Bellerín, gets an equaliser for Betis. And it's everyone's fault but the Real Madrid players, Terry.
Yeah, this is. I mean, it keeps happening, and it's a weird period now. I mean, it's pretty certain that Barcelona are going to win the league. They need 5 points from five games, and if you even forget in the Clásico, as long as they get 5 points from the next five games, and as you said in the intro, they've won 9 on the trot in La Liga. They weren't so impressive against Celta, but they're impressive against Getafe. But Real Madrid have. Just meandering along now, aren't they? And it must be hurting. It must be uncomfortable as well for the players and the people that Florentino Perez, as I say, the people that run the club. There's one person that runs the club. I said that without almost thinking. Then, so it is awkward. But this was a big game Friday night away from home at Betis. 50,000-60,000 people in the stadium. I guess they were playing on the Friday because they were assumed that they might still be in the Champions League and the extra day's rest would have helped. And they got off to a good start in this game. And I think it was partly to do, the blame was on Betis. I thought Betis sat too deep. Bakambu was isolated up front on his own. They played deep and they started their attacking play too deep. So short passes from the goalkeeper, they were having to work far too hard to get into the attacking half of the pitch, and they didn't do it for 20-odd minutes. And it was inevitable that Real Madrid's work, but they were creating chances, they looked sharp, they looked like they always do, heavily influenced down the left side of the pitch, and all that stuff, just the usual stuff we see from Real Madrid. And Vinicius gets the opening goal, follows up a mistake, I would have to say, from Álvaro Vaez. It wasn't good goalkeeping. They've had an issue with goalkeeping this season as well. Paulo Lopez has made mistakes. Alvaro Valles hasn't really been fluent this year, and he hasn't reached that form that we saw at Las Palmas. Maybe the year out has taken a toll, and he needs to, you know. And also, Pellegrini's been guilty of swapping, chopping and changing them, which probably hasn't helped either of them because they're both good goalkeepers. This was a goalkeeping mistake. Vinicius follows it up. Then there was a change of plan from Betis. They were more assertive, and they were getting higher up the pitch. They were being a little bit more direct as well. And the game changed. By the time they get the equaliser, it was deserved. And yet Real Madrid started the game off so well, was so dominant. They were playing against a team I watch Betis obviously all the time, and that happens. They play like this sometimes, where they play within themselves and they're too deep and it's too structured. And then when they let loose and take the brakes off, or Pellegrini does, they look a completely different team. And that's exactly how this game panned out. They deserved the draw in the end.
Yeah. And Mbappe injury, I was going to say a worry, but they're not going to win the league anyway. So I know they want him back for the Clásico because they don't want to go into the Clásico without their best player. If you're French, you're thinking, leave him alone now. Just leave him out for a month and play him in the World Cup.
Yeah, we haven't heard too many details on the severity of the injury. It didn't appear to be too bad. It was him that suggested that he'd be taken off. Perhaps that's his mindset now as well. Perhaps he felt a little twinge and thought, I don't want to run the risk of pulling a muscle entirely. So it's him that decided to be substituted. Yeah, but it's kind of weird. I mean, you're Real Madrid. There's an obligation in every single game you play, even if you can't win the league or you're not going to win the league now. There's an obligation in every single game. I mean, you put on that white shirt of Real Madrid not to go half-hearted. They didn't in this. I'm not criticising their attitude in this game. But if someone like Mbappe and one or two others start thinking ahead of the World Cup, thinking, this is not for me, I don't want to get injured, I don't want to pick up a knock, then it becomes, as uncomfortable as it is already, it could get worse. I mean, they've got some home games to play. And it's unthinkable that I'm struggling to get my head around it this season. They're going to go 2 years without a trophy. We're so used to seeing them win at least something. Yes, they have an odd season where they don't, but they did win they won the Champions League and La Liga not too long ago. Danny Carvajal scoring at Wembley. And then to go 2 years against the Barcelona team in La Liga domestically, Real Madrid have been splashing the cash. Barcelona haven't. Barcelona have been bringing young players through, relying on talent coming through the academy. Real Madrid are out spending the money, and it's just not working. So this game was kind of indicative of what we see from Real Madrid. Started off really sharp, really fast, looked really good. And then it's when Betis kind of sussed it all out and showed a bit more courage in terms of how they wanted to play. Real Madrid a draw was a fair result in this game.
Alan is one of our patrons, patreon.com/LTEL. A well-deserved equaliser for Betis at the end there. Tactical question. We've got two questions here. Tactical question. What do you think Real Madrid work on through the week? It looks so off the cuff. No link between midfield and forwards. This is the most wasteful I've seen Vinny and Mbappe be tonight. Both looked like they wanted to hog the ball until they lost it. And then actually mirrors what you say about Betis's tactical change. And then his other question at the end here is, where do Real Madrid buy next year to sort this issue? Because I don't see an obvious solution when they want to squeeze in two superstars who don't want to do the hard work off the ball.
Yeah, it's not just much. It's not only the hard work off the ball. It's the earlier point that the hogging the ball. That was evident in this game. And then when they do lose the ball, both of them are guilty of not making an instant effort to try and get it back. Also, the point about what do they work in training, five sides, keep them. It looks like that. It looks to me that it's what do they need? Who do they buy? I think they've got enough good players. It doesn't need a major overhaul, but it needs a strong manager. And are they going to get one? I don't know. I'm going to say a strong manager. It's the manager that's going to be allowed to make the decisions that Xabi Alonso clearly wanted to make and wasn't allowed to do so. Probably was never told, you can't take Vinny off, or you can't leave Vinny on the bench, or you can't leave Mbappe out. But it was you know, it when he took Vinny off a couple of times, he probably thought, this is more trouble than it's worth. Mm. You know, it's because I know how this is going to end up, that it's going to be a choice from Florentino Perez on the player or the manager. And you end up fudging it then and just going along with it and not really being the manager you want to be. So I where would they buy? I think I'm looking at defence. I think they're okay. I think they could bring someone else in, because I would imagine David Alaba will move on. It's a problem with Militao picking up as many injuries as he does, because you couldn't buy a better one, I don't think. I don't think you could go out and buy a better centre-back than Eder Militao. But the fact that he's only playing so few games doesn't help. Is Asensio up to the job? Probably not. So he's another one you could sell for decent money. Housing, I think, is good, and he's young, and he'll get better. So there is potential to shuffle things around at the back. You keep Danny Carvajal, personally, I would, to be honest. Particularly if it's a new manager. I mean, there's Arbeloa has just gone with Trent Alexander-Arnold. That's it. And you can see Carvajal seething on the bench every game. But if there's a new manager coming in, then it might be they might see it differently.
So even if you sort of agree with Arbeloa's thought that he's perhaps past his best and you want to give Trent Alexander-Arnold a good run at it, you want Carvajal there for his leadership and his connections with the club and everything else. You still want him there as a person.
And also, I would still say it's up for grabs. I don't think Carvajal's past his best. Yeah, clearly he's past his very best. But I still think he's at a good level. I don't see Danny Carvajal coming on and thinking, call it a day. Yeah. You know, you're getting wingers are knocking it past you every 5 minutes and you're struggling with pace and you can't turn anymore. All the usual things we see from a veteran player, but I don't see that from Danny Carvajal. So
yeah.
I think that's for the new manager to choose, see what happens, but his contract's up. Unless they make the change early in the summer, as soon as the season ends, and if Arbeloa looks like he might stick around, then Danny Carvajal won. Goalkeeper is fine. Lunin was their best player again.
It's a shame for him. He made that bad mistake against Bayern, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this run of his replacing Courtois, I think he'll probably be remembered for that, unfortunately. But he's actually played well, hasn't he, in games? So,
He's as good a cover as you're going to get.
Yeah.
And Courtois is clearly number one goalkeeper. Lunin accepts that and is having a good career being number two. And I don't think that needs to change. Midfield, you'd have to move someone. Thiago Pitarch played again. Literally every single game he plays, he nearly causes a goal, and he's got away with it on every occasion by coming to receive the ball short. He loses it and it's nearly a goal. Defenders are getting him out of trouble. Goalkeeper's got him out of trouble on a few occasions. Danny Ceballos wasn't even in the squad the other night. That was quite a big story in Spain, that he's not even making the matchday squad now. So an attempt there to move him on. Accusations from the Real Madrid fans that he's only stayed there for the money. But it's not his fault that Betis couldn't come up with the money. And I don't think Betis could even come up with the transfer fee, let alone the wages. So I don't think it's ever been an option for Danny Ceballos to actually go and leave. He had the chance and he went to Arsenal on loan. So that suggests to me that if the possibility was right and there was the potential of a move, he may well have done. Do I think he's over the hill? Of course not. And do I think he should have been in the squad the other night? 100%. You know, he's not been fit, but he's back fit now. He's been fit for a while. And I think he's a decent player. Do they keep him? No, clearly not. Sell him and try and get a deal done. He's probably been there too long to change that narrative now that he's a squad player and he's only stayed for the money. I don't put him in the same category as Mariano Diaz, who stayed there purely for the money.
Yeah.
I think Danny Ceballos is a serious player that probably should have been involved in the game against Betis. And especially if they want to sell him, Betis are the obvious ones to buy him.
Yeah.
Don't rule him out of that game. And
right.
Up front, they need a centre forward.
Yeah.
And they probably need a manager that's going to come in. And the Vinicius thing is an issue now. He's just got a year left on his contract. next season on his contract, and Real Madrid can't afford to let him go on a free transfer. The problem is, if you sell him, who can buy him?
Yeah.
I'm not sure anyone can.
Yeah, especially with Saudi currently seemingly out of the equation at the moment, isn't it? Because of the political, you know, the financial implications of the war going on.
Yeah.
I'll put it in words. And it's, as I've said before, it's difficult to sell a player that expensive to a Premier League club at the moment because they're all still working through the new financial restrictions. And you sort of have to plan a transfer. If you're expecting to get 100 million for a guy, they can't just drop 100 million out of nowhere. I think they've got a plan for it. And
Real Madrid at one some stages would have been asking for 200 million.
Yeah, yeah.
But and not getting that now. No one can pay that anymore.
Yeah.
So that's the dilemma.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Is everybody's aware of it now.
Yeah.
Where the way they play, Mbappe still drifts out to the left. Vinicius drifts out to the left. Arda drifts out to the left. Camavinga, Bellingham, Carreras pushes down the left, and Ferland Mundi and Brahim Diaz. What's his name? Name's Fran Garcia. Sorry. Sorry, Blake. I've had hundreds of Spanish football names in my head over the last few days. So the left back is fine. But the point I'm making is we can see it. And I don't even bother looking at the team shape anymore in terms of the average position. It's always the same. Mm. And any decent manager will recognise that. You have to guard against it because they are good down their left. But there's no one on the opposite side. There's only Trent Alexander-Arnold or Danny Carvajal. Even Fede Valverde's not playing wide in the midfield now. So it's the manager first and foremost. But so I don't think the squad needs a massive overhaul. The manager needs to be a proper manager, and a manager that's been allowed to do what probably Xabi Alonso wanted to do but couldn't. That's the problem.
Right. So let's move on. Talk about Barcelona. Let's give credit where it's due to Barcelona. We obviously we're doom-mongers because we work in the media. So we want to, you know, focus on Real Madrid's problems. But 9 wins in a row. In the two leagues that they've won in the last 3 seasons, they've got 88 points. So they're going to go past 88 points comfortably. If ever they think win every game to the end of the season, get to 100, back to the glory days. Getafe away, you look at that and you think, oh, that's a difficult game. Getafe didn't have a shot on target in the game, so I know they messed up in the Champions League against Atleti, which is a massive stain on their season. But they've done a terrific job, Barcelona.
They have, and in this game as well, you're playing Getafe away from home. With no Lamine Yamal, no Rafinha, and they made. Do you know what I was critical of their performance against Celta in the week. I thought they were really poor in that game, but in this game, after 10 minutes, I knew they would win because they were fighting. I think it was a reaction to two reactions: one, the poor performance against Celta, and B, they knew they were playing a tough team away from home. And their record isn't good in that stadium. And also they had the boost of knowing that Real Madrid had dropped points the night before. Yeah. So this was, it was not crucial in terms of winning the league, but it's they didn't want to let this opportunity slip. And they're better players than Getafe, obviously. But Getafe are a tough team to play against. But the first 10 minutes, they picked the right centre forward in Lewandowski. He was up against 3 central defenders of Getafe. He was pinning them. He was knocking the ball down. And when the ball was knocked down in midfield, Barcelona players were winning it. Mm. And so they knew what the job was going to entail. You know, we're going to have to fight from the first minute. And they did that. And as soon as I saw them winning knockdowns in midfield with like Pedri and Fermin Lopez and Dani Olmo and people like that, I'm thinking that they'll win this game. Because their attitude was exactly right. And that's how it proved to be. It was always, they didn't run away with it. It was always going to be tough going. And credit to Getafe for what they've done in the second half of the season. But it was, yeah, I thought it was a really impressive performance for different ways than we normally give Barcelona credit for. Yeah. They fought really hard in this one.
Marcus Rashford and his future. He scores in this game, shows us the quality that he's got.
Yeah.
And they can have him. They can have him for 30 million euros.
I think it works out about £25 million, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So, given the financial restrictions on Barca are easing, they're in the back in the stadium. They've still got the massive debt, but they're going towards being allowed to spend any transfer money that they pull in, the one-to-one thing. Still not straightforward. They can't chuck money around. So, are you spending 30 million on Rashford?
I probably would, actually. Yeah. As long as the wages are not...
That's the problem, yeah.
That's the problem. But apparently he's happy and he wants to... He's not against taking a wage reduction. Mm. And then I think when I look around now at 30 million euros, that's good value, I think. I know he's 29, coming up for 29 soon. And it's something that Barcelona don't normally spend that type of money on a player of that age. But it's hard to go and get the equivalent of Marcus Rashford for that price. Mm. I think it's, and he's accepted his position he's had lots of football this year. He's probably cheesed off he wasn't starting this match, bearing in mind Yamal and Rafinha were both missing. But he came off the bench in a good mood, scored a good goal, and he's going to be an important player this season in Barcelona winning the title. He played lots of football in the first half of the season when they were all injured. I think he's good value. Unless they've got someone knocking around who's another Lamine Yamal. Tony Fernandes is one of those that's we've seen briefly but not seen too much of recently. We've seen the emergence of Fermin Lopez in the last couple of years. But I think there's room for Marcus Rashford at Barcelona. And I think it would cost them more money to go and buy an equivalent player, to be honest. So if they can get it done, I think they should.
Yeah.
But it depends on his salary.
Yeah, because there are dilemmas in there. Because you've got to build this squad within the budget, haven't you, is the problem.
Yeah.
And I still think, I know you've got a slightly different view. I still think, I don't know. I'd still drop a lot of money on a centre-back if you could tell me the ideal one.
Yeah. They need centre back and centre forward. That's a given. Lewandowski apparently is not pleased with the fact they've only offered him a certain amount of money for another year. It's still millions of euros, but it's not. He feels aggrieved because it's a lot less than he's on now.
It's a weird psychology, that, isn't it? Once you're in the state, it's all about status.
He's 37.
Yeah. There's a status element about money, isn't there, once you're rich? I think, because you don't need money. Rashford gets paid 300 grand a week. He doesn't need any more money.
No.
He's never going to be short of money. You just put that, stick it somewhere sensible. You'll never have to,
I think it's 6 million a year Lewandowski's been offered.
Yeah.
And it's nothing compared, I don't know where he's on now. Mm. He feels insulted that it's only 6 million. Then you think, well, they didn't have to offer you anything, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going, they're probably better off if they let you go. And
because it's not like a younger player where you think, oh, we'll get him, even if we're going to sell him, we'll sign him up on a contract just to try and keep a bit of value and stuff. But there's a danger with that, isn't there? As we're seeing, as these financial rules come in and are quite strict, UEFA and La Liga notoriously so, you can end up being stuck with players.
Yeah.
Past their best and with injuries and stuff, they're everywhere. Every club's got them, and it's a problem. If I was Barca, I would let Lewandowski go and say,
yeah, I think so. And also, I think for him, it'll get longer.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah,
they're talking about Milan and Juventus.
Yeah.
Well, they're not going to give him a 1-year contract.
Yeah,
so he'll probably get a 2 or 3 year deal now, and he's in great shape. But he's not Lewandowski. I mean, I was looking at his stats. If they win the league, this will be his 14th title in 18 seasons. And it goes back to Lech Poznan. And you forget the title at Dortmund.
Yeah.
And then Bayern. And then he comes to Barcelona, wins 3 out of 4. It has been an astonishing footballer. He was good in this game. He still could play a role at Barcelona on reduced wages and be on the bench and come off and be, you know, a help to the squad. He doesn't want to end his career like that, though, I wouldn't imagine. I think he wants to end his career being a, if he wants to, and he's in great shape, just not as quick as he once was. At times, he's like a statue up front in terms of when the ball's out wide, but then he comes alive when the ball comes into the penalty box. I mean, he's brilliant. I don't want to, you know, be disparaging about Robert Lewandowski. That would be absolutely ridiculous. But their needs now for Barcelona is to get, if they could spend the money that they've spent in the past, one of the big name centre forwards, that would make such a difference.
Yeah.
Ferran Torres has done well recently. I still think he's a wide player that's done a job up front. So you're talking Osimhen, Erling Haaland. In the past, they're the type of players that Barcelona and Real Madrid have been linked with. So if they could get that in a centre-back, I know they haven't got the money to do that, but it's Lewandowski, I think, has fulfilled his role at Barcelona, to be honest.
Yeah.
More than done that.
Right. Atletico Madrid got an actual win in La Liga. Saw up with the late goal, and then there was a later goal still, wasn't there, for Athletic? But so a 3-2 win against Athletic Club. It was only Athletic Club who are on the metaphorical beach, but a win crucially ahead of the first game against Arsenal. I'm interested in you reflecting on this game, but also, I'm going to predict what you say. You want Atleti on the front foot against Arsenal, taking the game to Arsenal. I fear that we won't see that. I think we'll see a negative Atleti. What do you think?
No, I think we'll see a really fast start. The first game's at home.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we'll see a really fast start from Atleti. My concerns would be defending set pieces.
Yeah.
And teams in the Premier League have kind of sussed out Arsenal in terms of how to defend those set pieces. But Aitor Paredes, the goal he scores in this game, you're thinking, oh my goodness me, that was 4 or 5 players not marking anyone, bit of zonal marking, bit of man-to-man marking. It didn't look really well organised, and you worry about that. My interest in Atleti is how they've been plotting their way through this season in the last couple of months, where players are not playing in La Liga. My interest is... Thankfully for them, and for Athletic Club, of course, but thankfully for Atletico, they got a win in this match because they've been winning many games lately. Mm. I mean, even the second leg of the Champions League against Barcelona, they'd actually lost that match. They've been losing La Liga games left, right and centre. So it was important for them to get a win in this one. The team has been a mixture of... we had a few weeks where it was purely a B team. In the last couple of games, he's been shuffling it up a little bit more. And bringing on players as well to get half an hour, you know, second half and stuff like that. Pablo Barrios getting injured again is a blow. Because I think I'm not sure if he'd play in central midfield, but Marcus Llorente has been shuffling around between right back and midfield, but I think he'd play midfield against Arsenal. So my interest is just then, and the one trophy that they really had a good chance of winning was the Copa del Rey final, and they blew it. And now it kind of puts the pressure on them that, you know, they're 25 points behind Barcelona. They gave up that chase a long time ago. All their eggs were placed firmly into winning the Copa del Rey and maybe, you know, winning the Champions League. Well, they now have lost the Copa del Rey. So the motivation would be there. Otherwise, if they get beat by Arsenal on these two legs, then people can look at Atletico Madrid again this season and go, massive spend, massive turnaround in players. And massively underachieved. So, yeah, I'm intrigued to see how Arsenal, who are having to play a full-strength team in every game they play, fare against the... I'm sure there's been different fitness routines at the club, because you can't just say to Julian Alvarez, you're only playing cup matches, you're not doing anything else, we're barely going to put you on in La Liga, and we expect you to be sharp and ready to play Arsenal in 2 legs in the Champions League. Mm. So it'd be interesting to see how they've been planning for this. I think Tapie said to us that Luis Enrique has been doing similar at PSG, but he plays the first choice front three with the second choice midfield and the first choice back four, or second choice back four with the first choice midfield and stuff like that. So he risks like an entire department of the team.
Yeah.
Whereas Simeone has done it all 11 in some cases.
Yeah.
So I'm intrigued. I'm interested to see how, if we're going to look at this game and go, bloody hell, Atleti were at it from the first minute, overpowered Arsenal. Arsenal looked weighted and jeery, weary and jaded. And you could see the difference between a team that, you know, Arsenal at the weekend had to win their game. They've got to win every game in the Premier League. I'm interested to see how it goes. But I don't think Atleti can be negative. I mean, even this game, they can see two goals. They can see pretty much goals every game.
So I
don't think they can be negative. I'm looking forward to the game, though. And as I say, for those reasons, I'm interested now to see if the way that Simeone has done it. And I get it. Why would you want to risk Julian Alvarez getting injured? Griezmann, who plays up front? I mean, Lookman wasn't in the squad. I wasn't sure why.
He's got an injury, hasn't he? So.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Pardon?
He's a doubt, isn't he? He's listed as a doubt for the game. So,
do you play, do you squeeze in Griezmann, Soloth and Alvarez?
Yeah.
Tempting. Soloth when every play scores.
Yeah.
And he's a useful addition for defending those set pieces.
Yeah.
You put him on that near post zone, he heads every one of them away. Lewandowski did it the weekend. Big centre forward. They know how to defend the corner at the near post. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see the team selection. I'm sure Juventus play midfield. And they were good in this game, but for different reasons. I mean, it was... It's a struggle for them because there doesn't seem to be any fluency. There's, you know, Obed Vargas is playing, Nico Gonzalez is playing, then comes off the bench and he's playing well. And there's Johnny Cardoso's in and he's out. Molina doesn't know if he's playing, or and then Llorente doesn't know if he's right back on midfield. Lenglet is playing and Lionel Mann's. Hansko is probably not going to be fit if he hasn't been fit. Oblak doesn't look at his best, I have to be honest. I mean, one of the goals in this game, I think it's the Guruzeta header. You're looking and thinking that I don't see him getting beat by that 2 years ago. But he's only just come back from a brief spell and being injured. So does Musso playing goal or do you stick with Oblak? Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this game.
Right. We'll do one other game and then everything else is the relegation battle after that. So that's the way it is at the moment, this amazing relegation battle. Let's just briefly, though, talk about Villarreal 2, Celta Vigo 1. A game of a couple of penalties. One that was awarded in the 24th second of the game, so it wasn't the wisest bit of play. Yeah. But then the other one, talking about players flopping, and we've accused Celta Vigo of looking for this. The challenge by Gay, it's on Aspas, isn't it? It's the softest, most brainless penalty I think I've ever seen. He's Iago Aspas is on the 18-yard line, isn't he?
Yeah.
Facing away from goal, trying to control the ball. And Gay just runs through the back, kicks him from behind. Not very hard. But enough. Just tries to nick the ball, doesn't it? And kicks through his legs. And you think, what have you done that for? That's a foul.
Yeah,
it's got to be a foul.
That happens quite a lot, actually, where you think, why even consider making that contact?
Yeah.
Risking that contact in and around the penalty, and you know the punishment is going to be a penalty.
Yeah.
So that's, and managers can't legislate for that. I'm sure Marcelino's looking at it and thinking, and I'm an experienced player as well, just losing his bearings and crashing into an opponent and giving away a ridiculous penalty.
Yeah. Yes.
But the Villarreal have been, they're kind of boring.
Yeah.
In a good way for them. They're consistent, but they've won lots of games this season. They're having a super season domestically. They're probably going to finish third above Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
And when I say they're boring, it's because you see this game and you think, yeah, Villarreal win that, and they do.
Mm.
And there's nothing much more to talk about Villarreal. They just keep beating teams they should. They've struggled against teams that are above them this year, struggled in the Champions League. But I'm hearing rumours, though, that Marcelino might not be there next season.
Okay.
So that he feels the club are not backing him enough in the transfer market. I don't see where he gets a better job than this, though.
No.
In another country.
And they have bought players. I know they sold players, so they've had...
Yeah, their net spend wasn't a lot. It was the same, if anything. Over 100 million sold, 100 million spent. So I wouldn't imagine... Perhaps it's a hangover from the Champions League, where he feels that squad isn't deep enough to compete in the Liga and the Champions League. And perhaps he wants a little bit more investment in terms of numbers, bringing more players in so that Vieira have got, similar to Atletico Madrid, where you've got 20-odd players that can participate on Europe and the Liga.
Although Atleti haven't really done that, have they? Because they've got furthest in Europe, but they haven't competed in the league. So
Yeah. So it's a dilemma. I hope he stays there. I think it's a good fit, to be honest.
Yeah.
And they must do better next year in Europe. That's the criteria, though. I'm not saying if they don't sack him, because he's done a good job, but I hope it's not. That's not the case, that he's no longer manager of Villarreal next season.
Right. So we've got six other games to talk about, of which one, two, three, four of them I'd describe as six-pointers, because everyone else is in the relegation battle, more or less. I'll run through them all. We'll do them all sort of collectively. Alaves 2, Mallorca 1. Huge result. A couple of goals for Tony Martinez. Valencia got a 2-1 against Girona. The game that you commentated, Terry, was Rayo 3, Real Sociedad 3. We need to talk about that because we need to talk about the VAR and everything else. Osasuna 2, Sevilla 1. A late winner. Sevilla 1 win in 11. Oviedo 1, Elche 2. And then the one we waited for, Espanyol 0, Levante 0, which was, I was delighted we waited 24 hours to talk about this game.
I'm looking at the table, John, and I've got Rayo 39 down and Valencia 39, Espanyol 39. Those teams with five games to go are 5 points above relegation.
Yeah.
So it's unlikely, but Espanyol, we know, haven't won a game since Christmas. They get the 0-0 against Levante, and you think, oh, they've got a point. They're inching their way towards it. Levante are 19th, and Espanyol couldn't beat them at home. I think it's 2 points from the last six games. They're running out of games now, Espanyol. So I think it's going to take more than 40 points. Espanyol's running is pretty difficult. There's the big game is against Sevilla. They play Sevilla. So I'm looking at Levante now. Espanyol got Real Madrid at home, as you said earlier. Sevilla away, Athletic at home, Osasuna away, Real Sociedad at home. So they're not. I mean, so apart from Sevilla, that's the only team they're playing amongst the half the division. Yeah. They're in this relegation issue. So that would be an incredible story if Espanyol, who were fifth at Christmas, had won five games on the trot going into this run of 16, I think it is now, without a win. Their chances, but Levante had a chance as well. It's probably a better chance, a better point for Levante away from home against Espanyol. They keep a clean sheet. They move on to their next game. Etteri Young probably should have scored. Roberto Fernandez should have scored. But Levante and Sevilla are still within touching distance. Oviedo, I'm afraid, after losing at home to Elche, I think there's been a resignation that they knew they were down 2 or 3 weeks ago, but they keep battling and keep showing that spirit. But now they're seven adrift.
Yeah, it looks so good, doesn't it? Obviously, so it's such good support, and it was such a tough ask for them to stay up this season. But you sort of hope that they can come back again. I'd happily see them back. We should briefly mention Pedro Bigas and his goal in this game. Shouldn't we?
Incredible goal, wasn't it? It took off. He strikes it well, but then it almost looks like a gust of wind or a tornado gets behind it and it just flies into the top corner. I did see some of the Oviedo players looking at the goalkeeper, who's been brilliant for him this year, Escande, and he's shrugging his shoulders and saying, I couldn't do anything with that. Yeah. It was a wonderful strike.
More long-range shooting.
Gonzalo Villa's goal was good as well. And they still fight back Oviedo. It kind of gets a goal towards the end of the game, but a good couple of games for Elche, where they picked up some points and eased themselves away. As I say, it's astonishing. I'm looking forward to week 37, week 38. We've actually got a weekend next week. Then we've got the following weekend, Clasico weekend, and midweek and a weekend. So that's where it's all going to unfold. Those three games in a week, weekend, midweek, weekend. We're going to then going into the last two games of the season, which we traditionally see that particularly week 37, all the games played together. And then obviously 38, if there's obviously the team, the top five probably is done by then. But it's going to be interesting going into the last two rounds. After that midweek burst, so weekend, midweek, weekend, that's going to be the because you can see how it's transformed. I mean, Elche have had a couple of wins and suddenly, bang, they're out the bottom three and 4 points clear. I mean, it's that week of action where you've got three games in a week where managers panic is going to be really telling. So I think it's really thrilling, really exciting.
If we don't give betting tips, but if I did, the thing I always think, if you're in the bottom three, right, this is football wisdom coming here, hold the front page. If you're in the bottom three, you're extremely vulnerable because so you're looking at this and you're thinking, oh, well, so more than a point a game, Sevilla, blah, blah, blah. But if now you're Sevilla and you lose, so who've Sevilla got coming up? So they've got Real Sociedad on Monday night, then Espanyol, huge game, Villarreal away, Real Madrid at home, Celta Vigo, right? It's feasible that Sevilla don't win any of those games. And therefore, all this plotting and calculating and, I wonder in the last day we could have 5-10 games, or you know, et cetera. All that could be nothing if Sevilla carry... I mean, they've won one game in 11. If they carry on like they are carrying on, they will go down because at some point Sevilla need to win some games. And they lost 2-1 to Osasuna. It's a major story. It's been brewing. We've talked about Sevilla and their troubles before, but you know they're standing now, aren't they? They're standing in the middle of the road, and the juggernaut's coming towards them.
And do you know what's interesting? That the teams at the bottom, none of them are really bad, and none of them are playing really bad. And even Sevilla in this game, I mean, they take the lead from Neil Valpo 20 minutes to go, and then not so soon to get the 80th minute equaliser of Real Garcia with a good goal. And then Alejandro Quintana scores in the 99th minute. Mm. So Sevilla weren't bad in this game. You could easily make a case for they deserved a point. Now, Elche and Espanyol and Levante weren't bad in their game. Oviedo and Elche weren't bad in their game. Neither of those teams played really bad. Massive win for Valencia. And kind of you're thinking Girona were out of it, and they're not. They're back in it. You know, but sort of 3 weeks ago, Girona were a nice little run off form, picking up points. They were playing quite well. And all of a sudden, this round of games, we didn't have a weekend, did we? We had midweek, weekend. But that midweek in between the two weekends one is going to be telling. And I'm finding it hard to predict because I'm looking at Rayo 39, Valencia 39, Espanyol 39. You can't, because they're 11th, 12th and 13th, you normally would assume you're safe, but you're not. Mm. I mean, you're talking 4 points, 5 points above relegation with five games to go. And you talk about Sevilla not winning. Espanyol haven't had a win for 16 games. Easily, some of these teams who thought they were just about safe. Rayo got to European Conference semi-finals against Strasbourg to deal with it on top of that. So 39 points isn't safe. This is the exciting part of the league, isn't it?
The business end of the season, Terry, as we say. Rayo 3, Real Sociedad 3. That's just one last game that we'll do a little bit of detail on, partly because Julian... messages about the VAR. This is the worst nightmare of VAR, isn't it? Where an incident happens at one end, play goes on, there's a goal at the other end, and then what do you do?
Exactly. And what do you do as co-coms? I'll commentate the commentary team. So I'm looking at and thinking that Real Sociedad are appealing, which you tend to think then Pablo Marin was appealing. So I kind of thought that perhaps there was something in this, but you then have to commentate on the fact the goal was scored at the other end of the pitch, and you see the delight of the players and the supporters, and you have to go with the atmosphere and the players. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, oh, some of the little square come up in the corner of the screen that VAR was going to go back. I knew it would go back and be checked.
Yeah.
And The problem was it took so long, John. That was the problem. I kind of get why it took so long, because it was really difficult, and the angles you were seeing and the replays to see who touched the ball, who touched the foot. But it does knock the life out of, sucks the life out of the enjoyment of football at times, doesn't it? We spend 5 minutes with not knowing whether that goal that Rayo had scored was going to be allowed, whether Rayo fans and players are now going to be looking at a penalty that's probably going to be scored because it's always Zabel taking it. It was dramatic. It probably was the right call, if I'm being honest. I think Ratti did touch the foot in an attempted tackle on Pablo Marin, who went down. But it was really good. Where's Sergio Camillo come from? These type of stories happen, don't they, in relegation battles where he hadn't scored all season. He scores the other night against Espanyol, and he scored a wonderful goal in this game. Lejeune got them back on to 3-2 when time was running out. Issy Palazon got sent off, so he's missing the next game, which is daft. He got sent off when he was on the bench. Real Sociedad are the team to play now. They've qualified for Europe. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get... There was a brief glimmer of hope that they could get fifth, and that might possibly get them in Europe. But I think the result of the weekend, and now Betis are 7 points clear of Real Sociedad. So Real Sociedad, they're one of the teams... They might be one of the teams to play.
Could decide the relegation thing, Terry, because they play four of those teams. I mean, I know half the league is relegation, but they play four of them between now and the end of the season. Sevilla, crucially, Monday night. So they want a Real Sociedad on that lovely beach.
Yeah, those teams, they tend to be, when you're in that situation, you tend to play properly, raise your game to a level that's normal when you're at home. It's the away ones where you've got a couple of hundred supporters that might have made the journey, but at home when you've got 30,000 people there, you get drawn into, you have to play properly. I'm not going to accuse Real Sociedad of knocking it off, but the motivation isn't as clear as it now they've won the trophy.
Yeah, qualified. And being fair, these fellas are playing at such a high level, aren't they? That if you knock off a tiny bit, you're not at the level anymore, are you? So, yes. Right. OK, we will leave it there, everybody. So we'll come back with patrons and wrap up what happens in Europe this week. And then there's another round of La Liga business end of the season, as we say. So thank you for your support, and we will see you next time for that.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.